Vermont Businesses for Social Responsibility is pleased to provide David Goodman's Conversations with underwriting from the University of Vermont Medical Center, Burlington, Vermont, National Life Group, Concept 2, The Alchemist, by Green Mountain Power, and Let's Grow Kids, as well as over 750 Vermont Businesses for Social Responsibility members.
Welcome back to the Vermont Conversation. This is the time of year. It's December, and the parents of high school seniors are caught up in the hectic and somewhat stressful task of applying to colleges. This is going on all around the country, but what is often overlooked as in these are the stories of coming from low-income students of color, and their stories are sometimes reduced to statistics. But a college guidance counselor from Brooklyn, Joshua Steckel, has written a book with his wife, Beth Zasloff, called Hold Fast to Dreams, A College Guidance Counselor, His Students, and the Vision of a Life Beyond Poverty, in which he details the story, the narratives of 10 different students in a Brooklyn public high school as they strive to get to and get through college. We're joined today by Josh Steckel. He is taking time out of his day as a guidance counselor, and one of his students, Maya Ennis. Josh and Maya, thanks so much for joining us on the Vermont Conversation.
Thanks so much for having us.
Josh, let me start with you and share a little of your story. You worked at an elite Upper West Side high school as a college counselor and quit. Talk about what drove you to change careers or trajectories.
I began at a, as you say, at a small private school in Manhattan, and it was really wonderful work in a lot of ways. I think that the college process is a really exciting and rich and complicated moment in the lives of kids and their families. And, you know, you're looking back on your education so far and trying to map out, you know, what your values are and what your hopes are. But I think that what happened for me, the more that I learned about how the admissions process works and the more that I learned about the landscape of higher ed, the more I saw that the students that I was working with were already coming in with a lot of privileges. And in many ways, even though they needed support and counseling, they had a really robust safety net. And it was clear that there were thousands and thousands of students in our city and certainly also across the country who really didn't have advocates or supporters in the way that my students in the private school world did. And so I really wanted to offer the same kind of intensive support to a very different population of students.
What even alerted you to the need, the difference between the services offered at your school and what might be found in inner city high school?
You know, one thing that happened was just I got more of an insider perspective on what's happening in the college admissions process for students who have strong advocacy. You know, I had the experience of speaking with colleges on behalf of particular students and seeing the ways in which slowing down the admissions process and slowing down reads for admissions officers meant that that they could often, you know, make a more favorable decision on behalf of a student because they had the opportunity to better understand the student, better understand the student's story, better understand the student's school context. It became very clear to me, actually. The way that it became clear was that I'd visited a number of public schools in my neighborhood, and it became clear that students often had nobody. It wasn't that they had somebody who was who had a very large caseload or somebody who was underqualified. It was that most public schools that I visited had no one serving in this capacity.
And what did that mean for students? Were students still applying to colleges from those schools?
Well, I think that it meant two kinds of things. I think the first thing that it meant is that many students moved forward in their education without the sense that college and higher education in all of its forms was really a possibility, or that it really wasn't a possibility for students like them, and that when they did do all of the really complicated and hard work to submit college applications, they often were not aware of the really wide range of choices available to them. or made bad choices, because one of the hard facts about the college admissions landscape is that there are a lot of really bad choices out there. There are a lot of college choices that don't give students a good shot of earning a meaningful degree without accruing a lot of debt. And so kids and their families need tremendous amounts of support to navigate what really feels like a field full of pitfalls.
Describe the high school that you are standing in right now. We can hear some of the noise of daily routines of the school in the background. Tell us about this school.
Sure. I'm currently the school counselor and college counselor at the Brooklyn School for Collaborative Studies. We're in a part of Brooklyn called Carroll Gardens. We're adjacent to another neighborhood called Red Hook. Many of our students come to us from this part of Brooklyn. We serve students in grades 6 through 12. We're a small, progressive public school, and we're a college preparatory school, so all of our students who come to us really knowing that college is going to be a possibility for them. And that's taken a lot of work, because we do serve a very large proportion of our students will be first in their families to go to college. And I think that the work of creating a culture where students have a school culture where students have that sense that college is a possibility has been challenging. The school that I work at is very similar to the school that we detail in Hold Fast to Dreams, as are most schools in the New York City public school system.
Well, I know we have one of the students who you work with, Maya Ennis, on the line. Maya,
yes.
Welcome to the Vermont Conversation.
Hi, thank you for having me.
What year are you in, Maya?
I'm actually a second-year student in a master's program. I attend Carnegie Mellon University, and I'm receiving my master's in public policy. So I am 6 years out of working with Josh.
So talk about your life prior to working with Josh and what your college, let's just say your post-high school aspirations were.
Absolutely. So I'm originally from Brooklyn, specifically Bushwick, which is a low-income community in Brooklyn that happens to be predominantly Black and Hispanic. Prior to working with Josh, I knew that I would attend college, but I did not know how to begin that process. I have working-class parents who are also both immigrants, so I am first-generation American, and my parents just didn't know what to do or where to begin. So prior to working with Josh, I did have a goal. I just didn't know how to attain that goal. But from working with Josh, you know, it was very basic things like working the Common Application, writing that initial college essay, to filling out the FAFSA. And honestly, as I said before, my college goals were just to get into college. But through working with Josh, I actually was able to expand those goals, and I knew that I wanted to attend a college that would push me and would actually take me out of my environment. So from Bushwick in Brooklyn, I ended up going to Wheaton College, which is a liberal arts college in Massachusetts. And that's something that I would have never known about had I not been working with Josh. In fact, Josh set up college visits and college interviews, actually. And I think I have one incredible story that did persuade me to actually do early decision for Wheaton, and that Josh, I believe, convinced the college admissions folks to come down to our high school and actually conduct interviews here in our community. And during my interview, I had one of the admissions people offer to, right there on the spot, take me on a personal tour of Wheaton College. So that was a pivotal moment in my whole high school career, just understanding that I can go to college, but I don't have to settle just for whatever I get.
Do you remember, Maya, do you remember what your college essay was about?
Yeah, actually, my college essay was about my younger brother and the experience of being a older sister. it wasn't exceptionally life-changing, but it meant a lot for me because at the time, again, as I said, I had working-class parents who were out of the home a lot, and I grew up as a traditional Latchkey kid, and I basically had a lot of responsibility over my younger sibling. We're 8 years apart, so I was practically a built-in babysitter. So for me, my younger brother and that experience was primary to me. So I wrote my college essay about being an older sister.
So you attend a very good liberal arts college, Wheaton College in Massachusetts.
Absolutely.
What was, and now you're at one of the top, you know, most elite universities in the country, Carnegie Mellon. What was it like to arrive at Wheaton College from, you know, your background?
I will say that my first semester was definitely difficult. It was a very hard transition, which I guess would have been expected going from New York City to a small town in Massachusetts, but the landscape of college is very hard, and there's only, I don't know, I feel that there's only a certain amount of preparation you can do before you get there. But I will say that me personally, I was lucky enough to have mentors in Josh and in other people in my high school. But I will say that a lot of my peers didn't have that as well. So I did struggle. It was a great transition. Of course, I was sad to be away from my home and the community that I knew, but I did have support. Hmm. And not necessarily from the college itself. I do not feel like, or from my experience, liberal arts colleges are at a place where they can be fully supportive of low-income students of color just yet, but hopefully we're moving towards a better direction with that.
We're talking with Maya Ennis, who is a student now in graduate school, but who worked with guidance counselor and author Joshua Steckel. Josh Steckel is the co-author with Beth Zasloff of the book Hold Fast to Dreams, A College Guidance Counselor, His Students, and the Vision of a Life Beyond Poverty. Josh, what made you decide to write a book about your experiences?
I think that one thing that happened when I moved to the public schools was that I was really surprised in a lot of different ways. I was surprised by frankly how inconsistent my students' academic performance was. I was surprised often by how low many students' test scores were on the SAT. I was surprised by some of the things students had to go through every day just to get to school, getting through the metal detector and being wanded by school safety, being shooed out of the neighborhood at the end of the day by local law enforcement. And I was also really surprised by the stories that students were sharing. For so many of my students, their lives had really been defined by traumatic moments in their experience. And with all of those things taken together, you know, I was also just so moved and inspired by the power of their stories and what students were accomplishing on a day-to-day basis and how invested students were in learning and aspiring and striving to kind of engineer better life circumstances for themselves through their education. And I also felt like these were stories that we just don't hear when we read about what's happening in the college admissions process. So often we get a very narrow perspective on what's happening in the college admissions process. And these students' experience, we felt it just needed to be made visible.
Talk about some of the students who you write about, and perhaps, you know, the most challenging or the one that would most surprise people that this person ended up going to college.
one. So I guess I want to talk about Mike Forbes. But I also want to say that one of the reasons we wrote the book in the way that we did, where we followed 10 students over the course of 6 years, was that there were so many really amazing students' stories. And so often when we hear about disadvantaged students, we hear about like one superhuman, extraordinary kid who somehow makes it out. And the reality of things is that our schools are filled with kids with enormous potential and ability and talent who really just need, you know, adults who can believe in them and stand with them and move forward with them. But let me tell you about Mike, who I met in his junior year. He came to us from Georgia, and he was just this wonderful, clean-cut kid who had a little bit of a kind of slower southern accent because he had just arrived in the Northeast. And he always came down to the office, and he always came down in support of one of the young senior women in our class. He was always with, sort of escorting someone and trying to be helpful. And then I was just so excited about his senior year prospects. And I remember, that fall that nothing was happening. He wasn't getting nothing was getting done in his college application process. And it was a huge surprise, given how involved he'd been, the year before. And I remember just before Thanksgiving, he was out for several days at the same time that he was due to submit the personal essay, you know, the piece of writing that Maya was talking about. And I learned from one of his friends that that he'd lost his home, and that the next day he'd come in, and he shared this really heartbreaking story about how his apartment had burnt down, and all he really wanted to do now that he was finally back in school was get his personal essay done, and he just couldn't think about how to start it. And we just ended up talking, and he shared that at the current moment he was living in a shelter because his home had been destroyed, but that this wasn't the first time that he'd lived in a shelter, that in fact much of his high school experience he'd been bouncing around in temporary housing. And I think that one of the things that was most amazing to me was that here was this kid who had done pretty well in high school and had held it together in so many different ways. And underlying all of this was, catastrophic changes in life circumstances where, for me, I was just imagining if this young man had a certain kind of stability, like, what might he have been able to achieve? What if he were able to situate himself in a learning environment where he wasn't thinking about how he's going to take care of his younger brothers or where they're going to sleep that night? I think that his story is really powerful in that way. He ends up at Skidmore College, and he graduates, and actually he spent a couple of years as a teacher in Durham, North Carolina, and is currently in graduate school in Albany. But I'll tell you that the hardest part of his story for me was after he had gotten into a host of really wonderful colleges with really robust aid and scholarship packaging, he shared that he really wasn't sure that he wanted to go, that he thought maybe he needed to stay and support his mom and be there for his two younger brothers. And for me, initially, that was just my second year in the job, and I was sure that was initially the wrong choice, right? Like, it was a young man who really needed security in terms of housing, needed stability in terms of, having food to eat. And I realized that it couldn't be me who was the person to make those kinds of decisions. That all I could do was my best to understand where he was at and to be a supportive adult. That college wasn't going to solve all of his problems. It might give him an opportunity, and my job was to ensure that he had those opportunities. He ultimately chose to go, and it was hard. It was really hard, but Mike's the kid whose story has often the most surprises for me.
how do you the playing field is so not level. I mean, you have you know, well-off suburban kids who are having tutors and SAT prep and college counselors, and you have the students you're working with who have you at best. How does their application and their test scores and whatnot, how are they able to hold their own in this extremely competitive process?
It takes a lot of work. And I think that, you know, if I had to put a number on it, I'd say that each kid I work with probably needs like a good 10 hours of shoulder-to-shoulder time with, you know, with a caring, qualified adult who can support them through the process. And then, you know, for me, then I'm a real bug in the ear of the college admissions offices. I do what I can to ensure that, you know, that they're not missing these kids, because these are kids that we really can't be missing. You're right to point out that there is just one of me, and I'm not the only person doing this work. I mean, there's tons of really amazing school counselors doing this work in the country's public schools, but there's a pretty dire scarcity. The student to counselor ratios are really terrible, catastrophic almost. I mean, when you think about the kinds of opportunities that really ought to be available to a much larger proportion of students. But I think that the thing that we miss a lot in thinking about this work of how to help, you know, first-generation college students have the kinds of opportunities they deserve in the college process is that we're talking about a much larger scale of students. You know, half of the families in the United States are Pell eligible. They're eligible. They would qualify as low income. And the colleges and the sort of small liberal arts colleges and the prestigious colleges in the country that are doing the very best in bringing in students who are low income, who are eligible for Pell Grant, at best 20 to 22%, 20 to 23% of their students are receiving Pell Grants. And so there's just an enormous pool of students full of talent, I'm sure, that we are missing.
Let me turn back to Maya Ennis. Maya is a student you worked with. She attended Wheaton College. She's now at Carnegie Mellon in grad school. Maya, what difference has it made to the people you know in your family, in your community, that you attended college and now grad school, that you took the path that you took?
It's just an enormous thing for everyone involved. Seeing a lot of my peers, not many of them make it this far or as far as I have. Even if some do make it to college, some don't finish for the reasons we've discussed. But even after college, some go back to the communities and their old lifestyles. So I think it's had a tremendous effect on my own family personally. I think for my parents, just having them understand, even now, that there is a chance to make their own lives better and there are opportunities that they can achieve as well. But looking at my peers in college, even now for them, just understanding that you can push through and you can move forward is a very big deal. And I don't even think that I'm different from anyone else. I just think that I have had access to resources and I've had the opportunity to utilize those resources. So I feel like just seeing me take the path that I have allows my family, my community, and my peers to understand that there are ways to accomplish your goals, or that your goals can look different. They don't have to be the traditional goals of staying in the same community. You can get out of that community and explore so many other possibilities.
Maya, what do you hope to do after graduate school?
After graduate school, I hope I can continue on with public policy, either by way of building nonprofit and their capacity to help their communities, or go myself to work in local government.
As in being an elected official?
Perhaps somewhere down the road it is my goal to return to Bushwick and represent the House.
And since it is the holiday season, Josh Steckel, what is your biggest wish this holiday season?
Oh, wow. Well, I can tell you my wish right now, which is that I'd love to get home and get a rest. This is a crazy day, and it's filled with helping kids finish applications. And Maya and her peers are here as alum visiting and inspiring our current students. But, boy, if I had a big wish, that wish would be that every young person knew that they had a caring and qualified adult who could support them in envisioning and actualizing their educational future after high school.
Okay. Well, I want to thank both of you, Maya Ennis and Joshua Steckel, for joining us this week on the Vermont Conversation.
Thanks so much. We really appreciate
thank
the
you.
Opportunity.
Josh Steckel is the author of Hold Fast to Dreams, A College Guidance Counselor, His Students, and the Vision of a Life Beyond Poverty. That does it for this week's Vermont Conversation. A Merry Christmas and Happy Holidays to our listeners. You can spend the holidays listening to all Vermont Conversations at VermontConversation.com, and we'll be back next Wednesday at 1 here on WDEV.
You have been listening to Vermont Conversations with David Goodman, made possible by Vermont Businesses for Social Responsibility and its 750-plus members. Additional support is provided by Let's Grow Kids, focusing on the first years of child development, the University of Vermont Medical Center, Burlington, Vermont, the heart and science of medicine, The Alchemist, serving the greater Waterbury community and Vermont since 2003, Concept 2, designers and manufacturers of Concept 2 rowing oars, indoor rower, and ski erg, and proud to support nonprofit groups such as Salvation Farms, moving surplus foods from farms to those who need it. National Life Group, which lives its values every day to do good, be good, make good. By Green Mountain Power, partnering with customers on energy innovation while delivering clean, reliable, and cost-effective power, as well as over 750 Vermont Businesses for Social Responsibility members.
You are listening to locally owned and operated WDEV FM and AM. It is now 2 o'clock, and news is next.
AP Radio News. I'm Ed Donahue. The DA in Las Vegas says there is a lot of evidence.